Thank you very much for inviting me. I will just continue the discussion on quantum criticality in heavy fermions, and that's just one metal, one unconventional metal, ytterbium, rhodium to silicon 2. After a very brief introduction, I will introduce the material to you, then focus a little bit on this magnetic field-induced quantum critical point, discuss pressure, especially negative pressure effects, and end up with some speculative part concerning the disparity between transport thermodynamic properties when approaching the quantum critical point. These are the many collaborators. I will mention their names when I show up their results. We have a very close collaboration with Karl Neumeier at Walter Meissner Institute in Garching. He did wonderful low temperature specific heat experiments recently down to 18 millikelvin. And we have also theoretical support by Catherine Pepin and Piers Coleman. So my general introduction is kept very brief because Zubia is taking up after me. And so let me just start from the generic phase diagram of the heavy fermion metals, which is the central part of the well-known Donyak phase diagram, everybody knows. We have a coupling constant on the abscissa, which measures the strength of the mixing of the local F states with the delocalized ligand states. And as we've heard by Hilbert, this can be controlled experimentally by various parameters, such as chemical composition or pressure. And you always find, or very often find, some kind of anti-ferromagnetic order at the weak coupling side of this phase diagram and a heavy Landau Fermi liquid state on the strong coupling side. And there's this characteristic scaling temperature, which in rare earth-based heavy fermions should be identified as a Kondo temperature or Kondo lattice temperature. We are not so sure about uranium systems. That means, well, above this temperature, there's a very weak coupling between the localized F state that form the local moments according to Hund's rules and the delocalized surrounding conduction electrons of SP or D character. But upon cooling, this coupling becomes stronger and stronger and eventually leads to the quenching or the disappearance, at least in static properties, of the local moments. And along with that goes the formation of these funny quasi-particles, which we call heavy fermions. So the picture is you have a local F-spin surrounded by a cloud of conduction electrons whose spin polarization is compensating for this local spin. So these new quasi-particles are rather complex, as Hilbert has pointed out, complex objects. We may call composite fermions, consisting of the local spin and some, that's a local F, the heavy part, the dominating part of the quasi-particles, some admixture of itinerant conduction electron contribution. And loosely speaking, you may assign these two components to the spin and charge degrees of freedom. Well, in the spin fluctuation theory, which was mentioned, which until very recently was the only theory which was used to explain quantum critical phenomena, these complex quasi-particles are considered just as being itinerant F electrons, which on the weak coupling side of the phase diagram undergo an itinerant anti-ferromagnetic phase transition, a spin density wave transition, and beyond the critical coupling constant form the heavy Landau Fermi liquid state. So in many of these materials, the ordering temperature is found to vanish in a continuous way. That means at the quantum critical point where it hits zero, there's an abundance of strong, violent anti-ferromagnetic fluctuations, fluctuations of the order parameter, the staggered magnetization, which in this language is derived from the spin polarization of the Fermi surface, mediating the interaction among the charge carriers, introducing energy dependencies to the effective mass, to the effective quasi-particle scattering cross-section, and to unusual temperature dependencies, as we've heard, in the Sommerfeld coefficient of the electronic specific heat and the resistivity. So the resistivity in these heavy fermion metals is always dominated at low temperature by the quasi-particle scattering, and in the Landau Fermi liquid is given by a T-square. What we find here in the vicinity of the quantum critical point is not only a temperature-dependent Sommerfeld coefficient, but also deviation from the T-square, usually a power law with an exponent much smaller than 2, between 1 and 1.2. So this so-called spin density wave scenario has proved to be rather useful to explain quantum critical phenomena in transition metal systems, which I would call systems containing uniform quasi-particles, d-electrons. But it has been questioned from the outset, at least by a few people in our community, whether it could be as well applied to the heavy fermion metals with these composite fermions, quasi-particles. And as we have heard, another so-called locally critical scenario was proposed some time ago by Piers Coleman, Chi Miao-Si, and their collaborators, based upon these thorough inelastic neutron scattering experiments we have heard in Hilbert's talk, which showed for their quantum critical materials, cerium copper 6 with 10% gold. And these measurements show that the critical component to the fluctuations is described by this anomalous E over T scaling law, which is virtually independent of wave vector, except for this constant, which was depending on wave vector. The E over T part is independent wave vector, meaning that the Q equal to zero, the uniform susceptibility, is following a non-Curie-Weiss type temperature dependency with this funny exponent of less than 1/3 or so. So that shows that the critical fluctuations at the quantum critical point rather counterintuitively are rather local in nature rather than being locally spatially extended as assumed by spin fluctuation theory. So that was all for my general introduction. Now let us go to the material. This is one of the many systems that crystallize in the so-called thorium chromium 2 silicon 2 tetragonal structure. And here are the most salient non-Fermi liquid properties, a quasi-linear temperature dependency again in the electrical resistivity, and a logarithmic divergence in the Sommerfeld coefficient, both starting at 10 Kelvin or even above 10 Kelvin, and the resistivity following this linear temperature dependency down to the lowest temperature of 10 millikelvin, while the specific heat coefficient diverges stronger below 0.3 Kelvin. And I will address this feature later in the talk. Apart from this complication, or let's say at elevated temperatures above 0.3 Kelvin, these data are very similar to the ones we heard in Hilbert's talk, cerium copper 6, 10% gold, and as he has explained, can be described by assuming a system of two-dimensional interferomagnetic spin fluctuations coupled to a three-dimensional Fermi C. Of course, the big question is, and that's one of the puzzles, where you need a very strong geometric frustration to get two-dimensional fluctuations. Where does it come from in this orthorhombic system? And, pardon?
It's simple to get a specific heat, but for the resistivity, is that also doesn't...
Pardon me?
Is it easy to get delta rho wing as T in this scenario?
Can you...
Delta rho wing as T, is that appear in this scenario?
You mean you get a linear temperature dependency and a logarithmic divergence of the Sommerfeld coefficient in this Achim-Roche theory. Was that your question?
You need disorder for this.
Pardon me?
You need somehow disorder for the Achim-Roche.
No. Not in this two-dimensional. That's his theory on the three-dimensional. Yeah, that's true. But he hasn't worked on the two-dimensional system as a function of impurity, this.
No, because I think you have the plane.
Yeah, you get.
You don't have the hot spots anymore because all of the Fermi surfaces.
You see, you divide your Fermi surface and sheets by geometric frustration. You really end up in a two-dimensional scenario, as far as I understand in the theory.
I think it's just because at the local, at the quantum critical point, he was equal to the Simpson propagate on the cage like one at a time. So when you compute the Lim sigma, it's omega.
But it's only at a special wavelength because
from 2D ordering. Yeah, okay, that I agree. It's a little bit artificial, yeah.
So is the isotropic?
Yeah, I'll show you the data on the next few graphs. Third next few graphs. So let us then say there is a big similarity to cm copper 6 gold, and we can demonstrate that by showing by comparing the specific heat data. You saw Hilbert's data, and this is the quantum critical concentration of 10%, and this is our data, and this logarithmic divergence contains a characteristic spin fluctuation temperature T naught, which you just read off the intercept of this red line with the abscissa. It's 24 kelvins here. It's about 6 kelvin in the cm copper 6 gold. Interestingly enough, it is of the same order as the Kondo temperature of these materials, which you determine from other properties. That's interesting because these are two conceptually very different temperatures. So if we compare these data, we just use a reduced temperature scale, but also reduce the temperature in the Sommerfeld coefficient, and we normalize the temperature by this characteristic spin fluctuation temperature, and you see in that regime where we have this log T behavior, the data fall on top of each other. It's really remarkable. It seems there is some universality, at least a prefactor of this LMT term is the same for these two materials. Now to your question as far as anisotropy is concerned, the resistivity as a function of temperature is strongly anisotropic at high temperature, but you see if you go to low temperature, the anisotropy disappears and you get rather isotropic resistivity behavior at low temperature, namely this quasi-linear temperature dependence above a low-lying temperature, an ill temperature. So that's what we have anticipated in such a clean stoichiometric system, that the non-Fermi liquid features must be due to some low-lying interferomagnetic phase transition. If you're lucky, a quantum critical point, but you are not lucky in this case, we find magnetic order at 70 millikelvin. It's a very low ordering temperature for a heavy fermion for a stoichiometric one. We haven't seen this in the data I showed you before, because in the old generation of single crystals, the residual value of the resistivity was 2 to 2.5 micron centimeters. So that enhanced disorder was apt to wash out this kink in the temperature dependency. Now the new single crystals have residual values close to 1 micron centimeter, we can see it. And you see in the low temperature specific heat data by Karl Neumeier, this beautiful mean field type phase transition anomaly at 70 millikelvin. However, the entropy associated with that is rather tiny. It's roughly 1% of RLN2, and that has to do with a rather small ordered moment. Due to recent MuSR experiments by Doug McLaughlin and Kenji Ishida, this ordered moment is only at a hundredth of a mu Bohr, and I'll come back to this. So that is this very weak second order, namely anti-ferromagnetic phase transition. Now let us check the properties. Yeah.
So it's to be isotropic. So does that mean that one can already rule out this thing about quasi-two-dimensional fluctuations interacting with the electrons giving rise to a resistance?
In principle, yes, but we haven't done it. So we don't see an anisotropy in the data. So. Let me go on and show you the properties of the material right at the critical field or in the vicinity of the critical field. This resistivity curves as a function of temperature at zero field and at various applied fields. The field applied both parallel to the tetragonal basal planes, which by the way are the easy planes, that is the moments are pointing in these planes, and parallel to the hard C direction, the current was always injected perpendicular to the direction of the field. And we have separated, for the sake of clarity, these individual curves shifted by 0.1 micron centimeter. First thing to notice, there's no chromium type anomaly, so no increase in the resistivity upon cooling through the nail temperature. So there's no, in neither of these two field configurations, no spin density wave characteristics in the resistivity at least. You also see that the phase transition disappears in the field configuration parallel to the planes near 600 oersted, while the critical field is higher by a factor of 11, 7 kilo oersted for the field being parallel to the hard direction. The resistivity in the ordered phase follows a T-square with a very large coefficient. For example, in zero magnetic field, it's 22 micro-ohm centimeter per Kelvin square. So that's a gigantic number, and I'll come back to this. Above the nail temperature, we have this quasi-linear non-Fermi liquid behavior with a slope that is almost independent of the magnetic field, and you can follow this non-Fermi liquid feature down to the lowest temperature of the experiment, which is about 20 millikelvin, right at the critical field for either configuration of the field, as you see. But just beyond the critical field, the low temperature resistivity again is best described by T-square with a gigantic coefficient below some crossover temperature, which is here called T-star. Later on I will call it T-naught, which is increasing with the field, indicating the crossover from a low temperature field-induced heavy Landau Fermi liquid state to the non-Fermi liquid state at elevated temperatures.
But from this data, it doesn't seem that the A coefficient diverges from the order phase, right? If we look at the
but it does. Data, I showed you the data yesterday.
But this from there, you would not say that.
Yeah, right? Okay. Gabi, we concentrate on the paramagnetic side to check for the B dependence. The ordered state hasn't done, but it grows if you approach the critical field from either side. Show you.
Is there any significant critical behavior in the residual resistivity? What is the residual
resistivity? No, it has a peak at the critical field, but it's only a 20% effect. It's not a dramatic effect.
It's at a shallow
maximum. Right. Let me proceed with the specific heat. We can draw very similar conclusions from the specific heat measurements on such a single crystal. That is delta C, meaning we have subtracted from the raw data the contribution due to the nuclear quadrupole splitting, meaning that in zero magnetic field, this here is the Sommerfeld coefficient of the electronic specific heat versus T on a log scale. You see the phase transition is shifted again to lower temperatures. If you increase the field, it stays rather sharp in finite field. In overcritical field, there is at least an intermediate temperature regime in which C over T becomes almost constant, temperature independent. Again, below some crossover temperature, you'll see clearer later, which increases with the field. This little upturn at the low temperature side is due to the ordinary Zeeman splitting of the nuclear spin states due to the externally applied field, which we haven't subtracted from these data. And at the critical field, you see there's this unusual increase in gamma upon cooling. And I must say, the temperature window in which this experiment at this very field was taken is too small to make an exact analysis. So what you can do, you can put a straight line through these data, some log T term, but the slope is bigger than at higher temperature. But we can discard, I think, already at that point that this is flattening, going towards the square root of T. So we don't see this transition to seemingly three-dimensional fluctuations Hilbert has shown in cerium copper 6 gold. Another interesting point is in the ordered state, at zero magnetic field, you end up with a very large residual gamma value of 1.7 joule per Kelvin square mole. It's an enormous value for an interferromagnetically ordered phase. If you compare this number with the A coefficient I mentioned before, form A over gamma square, you are within 20% in agreement with the Kutowaki-Woods ratio for a Fermi liquid. In other words, the outward appearance of that ordered state is that of a very heavy Landau Fermi liquid state. And I will address this point again. Here's some recent NMR data, silicon 29 NMR, taken by Ishida and Kitaoka and collaborators in Osaka. The left part is plotted the night shift, which is related to the uniform, the Q equal to zero susceptibility. And on the right figure, 1 over T1T. 1 over T1 yields information on the spin fluctuations that derive from the Q averaged dynamical spin susceptibility. So rather complementary information. And what they find is that upon cooling, both quantities increase, and then below, again, some crossover temperature that increases with field flatten. Both flatten, again indicating this field-induced Landau Fermi liquid state. One of the T1T being constant is Coringa behavior. And for a non-interacting electron system, what you expect is that the ratio of 1 over T1T and Ks squared, Ks being the spin part of the night shift, should be given by this number as naught. If you had dominating ferromagnetic fluctuations, which would enhance the denominator here, the Q equal to zero susceptibility, you would expect an experimental value that is smaller than this number as naught, and vice versa, if you had dominating antiferromagnetic fluctuations, that should be larger than as naught. And what they find is, in that field-induced Landau Fermi liquid state, a number that is roughly one-tenth of S naught, meaning dominating ferromagnetic fluctuations. And that's in close agreement to our own observation, namely, if we look at this field-induced Landau Fermi liquid state, we find that the susceptibility is flat temperature independent at low temperature, like is C over T. So we can compare chi naught and gamma naught and estimate the Sommerfeld-Wilson ratio, which in typical heavy Fermi liquids is between 1 and 2, and here it's 14. So you see there is a dominating ferromagnetic component, at least in finite fields above the critical field. Now, for an NMR experiment, you have to apply a field. The lowest field they can apply is 1.5 kiloersted. That's still more than a factor of 2 larger than the critical field for this configuration, which was 600 ersted, but it's small enough to find a very interesting disparity between night shift and spin lattice relaxation rate. You see, in the lowest field, the night shift still is saturating below 200 millikelvin, while 1 over T1T continues to diverge down to the lowest temperature, following roughly a 1 over square root of T down to 40 millikelvin. In other words, out of these dominating ferromagnetic fluctuations, some critical antiferromagnetic fluctuations develop if you approach the critical field from above. And of course, these antiferromagnetic fluctuations are then responsible for the non-Fermi liquid behavior we have found, both in transport and thermodynamics at this critical field, and of course for the long-range order in the low field phase. Now let me switch gears. We have so far this suppressed antiferromagnetic order by applying a field. More interesting would it be to get rid of magnetic order at zero magnetic field. In order to achieve this, you have to expand the volume in an ytterbium system. You have to apply negative pressure to demagnetize an ytterbium system, and that can be realized in experiment by doping with the isoelectronic but bigger germanium on the silicon sides randomly. So here you see the resistivity, which I showed you before, for at ambient pressure. Under hydrostatic pressure first, you apply 1 or 2.7 GPa, and you see that this structure is shifted the other way than the cerium system. It's shifted downwards. That means, in some terminology, the condo temperature is depressed by pressure. The system gets more magnetic under pressure, and germanium goes just the opposite way. So germanium is supplying negative pressure to the material. And that means, with this 5% germanium single crystal here, I should say that's a nominal concentration. We have found out recently by careful study of microprobe studies that the actual concentration in that system is roughly 2% only. So most of the germanium is stuck in the indium flux. That's a little problem we have to solve. 5% was our estimate for the quantum critical point, but now that means in this sample we have an air temperature which is now 20 millikelvin, as you'll see later. Anyway, we have pushed it from 70 to 20, meaning we are close to zero temperature, and that means we can in zero field study all these unconventional laws in a wide range of temperatures. Here you see the resistivity. The measurement starts at 10 millikelvin, and it's strictly linear in temperature up to 10 Kelvin, even above 10 Kelvin. So three decades in temperature. And the fact that we, again, don't resolve the phase transition at 20 millikelvin is due to the unavoidable doping-induced disorder, which leads to this moderate enhancement of the residual resistivity to 5 or 5.5 micron centimeter. That's a harmless effect. The main effect of the doping is really a steric effect, the volume expansion. And like Hilbert has shown, we can do the same trick here. We apply hydrostatic pressure to this germanium doped system with this very low nail temperature, and by pressure we stabilize magnetism, and we get the same rather complex magnetic phase diagram, T versus pressure, which we had established before for the undoped material, and can bring the phase diagrams of these two materials in excellent coincidence by just shifting the data points for the germanium doped by minus 0.2 GPa uniformly. And that tells us that the main effect of the doping is the volume effect. Now let us discuss a little bit on the possible nature of the quantum critical point in that material. Of course, we are eager to do the neutrons, but by some experimental difficulties, we couldn't yet start. We have now Oliver Stockert in our group, and he's preparing this experiment. And we are very optimistic that by next spring we have beam time at ILL that this will be started, but we haven't done it yet. What we could do, however, is to check. So we could not check for this anomalous E over T scaling at finite Q, but what we could check is for the field over temperature, B over T scaling at Q equal to zero in the non-uniform, in the uniform susceptibility. And you have to believe me, the best fit we got is with the same scaling function they used, and the same exponent, namely 3/4. But it's not a perfect fit, and it is a fit only at elevated temperature and fields, as I'll show you. And one remarkable difference to the cerium copper 6 gold system here is that this constant, this Weiss temperature, which tracks all the Q dependency, is zero for Q equal to zero in this material, while it was finite for Q equal to zero in the cerium copper 6. So that means if you look at the data in the lower left part, 1 over chi versus T, that above, say, 0.3 Kelvin, our data, these circles are reasonably well described by that green curve, which is just this scaling function which I mentioned, which then goes to zero at low temperature, and there's a big deviation from our data, which there follow a Curie-Weiss law, a simple Curie-Weiss law. I come back to this in a minute. In other words, the schematic phase diagram looks like this. We have this kind of B over T scaling at elevated temperatures and fields, but not this scaling, at least when we approach the quantum critical point. So we have a Curie-Weiss type susceptibility developing below 0.4, 0.3 Kelvin for either of the materials, for the undoped above the nail temperature. You see here's a nail temperature, and for the for the doped material, and you see there are two straight lines closely spaced, that is the fit parameters we get out, are very similar for the two materials. A Weiss temperature, minus 0.3 Kelvin, and most surprising or astonishing is the moment, the fluctuating moment you get out of the slope, which is very big, 1.4 mu Bohr. I should tell you that there's a lot of crystal field splitting, which we have observed even with inelastic neutron scattering. And the Jake with 7.5 Hundsrück ground state of ytterbium 3 plus is split into three Cramer's doublets. And the lowest line, the ground state, is well separated from the excited levels. What we see here in this, in the Q equal to zero susceptibility, is apparently the unscreened, the full moment of that low-lying Cramer's doublet ground state. Although the condor temperature, now we come back to what was discussed before, here is much higher, 30 Kelvin. And I can show you one of the signatures of the condor temperature being 30 Kelvin in the thermoelectric power. There's a gigantic peak at this temperature, really minus 100 microvolt per Kelvin. Usually this is taken as a signature for the condor temperature. So that means we have at a temperature which is less than a hundredth of the condor temperature, below 0.3 Kelvin, no indication of condor screening in the Q equal to zero susceptibility. That's very funny. Looks as if you had a dynamical scaling down of the condor temperature upon cooling. Of course, as I said, this is Q equal to zero. We have to do our neutrons go to finite Q and see if there is this lack of condor scattering at finite Q, in which range of Q space this will be found. But that's remarkable. And what I should also like to say is that the temperature below which this Curie-Weiss behavior sets in, 0.3 Kelvin, is coinciding with the crossover temperature below which the specific heat coefficient deviates from the minus log T and diverges stronger. Let us discuss this aspect now a little bit more in detail. Here are the new low temperature specific heat experiments. For the two samples, again, we plot the Sommerfeld coefficient as a function of temperature on a log scale. And what we, and you see here for the 5% germanium doped sample, this little rounded phase transition anomaly indicating the nail temperature at 20 millikelvin. And this upturn, which sets in the undoped material at 0.3 Kelvin, is nicely continuing in the doped material all the way down to 20 millikelvin. And you have to believe me, this is an intrinsic feature. So there are many experiments done in our group to show that is neither impurity or hyperfine effects. One measurement, for example, thermal expansion, another thermodynamic property. And if you form the ratio of the volume thermal expansion coefficient over temperature, so that corresponds to the electronic specific heat over temperature, you find virtually the same, apart from the sign, you find logarithmic behavior above 0.3 Kelvin and a stronger divergence at a lower temperature. Well, I know that GMRC has all the data. He tries log. We didn't do. So we haven't checked more than just showing the similarity to the specific heat. But what I also should add, we found the ratio. So the Green-Eisen parameter, it's also diverging when we approach the quantum critical point.
Ratio of chi or gamma?
Oh, no. Gamma and the thermal expansion.
How about chi over gamma?
Chi over gamma, that I, for this sample, oh, that's, yeah, it's a good question. I haven't done it. Yeah, we have done it for, as I mentioned before, for the undoped material and found the Sommerfeld-Wilson ratio of 14. So I bet it will be the same or very similar here. So these ferromagnetic fluctuations are also apparently here. We find it in the magnetization and also in our zero field susceptibility as an increase at the nail temperature and the susceptibility. So there is a ferromagnetic component present also at low fields. Unfortunately, I haven't worked out the number. So this is then an intrinsic feature, and I think it should be related to the critical fluctuations that are associated with the true zero field quantum critical point, which we expect to occur at slightly higher germanium concentration. And the entropy under this upturn you see is shifted to higher temperatures if you apply magnetic field. You see here a little hump, which again indicates a crossover from the low temperature field-induced Landau Fermi liquid to the non-Fermi liquid state at higher temperature, which shifts up in field. That means at low temperature, the finite field data are lying below the zero field data. You see there's a tendency towards saturation, but I must warn you, you have to do another subtraction to get the electronic specific heat. As I showed you before, in a finite field, you have not only to subtract from the raw data the contribution of nuclear quadrupole, but also of nuclear Zeeman splitting due to the applied field. That you can do by special plots, and you can justify this analysis by comparison with the low temperature magnetization, which is shown here in the inset. So what I show here is the electronic specific heat divided by temperature, the gamma coefficient, and you see it's tending to saturate at low temperature, and the plateau value is decreasing with increasing field, and that is what I plot in the next figure. In the next left figure here, that's gamma naught as a function of field, and Gabi is always asking that. We have subtracted here the very small critical field, which belongs to that low-lying anti-ferromagnetic phase transition of 20 millikelvin, namely 270 oersted. That we have determined by magnetostriction experiments, which we now can conduct to 10 millikelvin. So it's a very small number. And for the conceptual discussion, let's assume that this thing were at zero, that we were already at the zero field quantum critical point with that concentration. Of course, we need something a little bit more. What one finds is that the Sommerfeld coefficient as a function of field diverges logarithmically in an elevated field range down to 0.3 tesla or so, and at lower temperature starts to diverge stronger following a power law with an exponent roughly minus one third. And that's at least qualitatively very similar to what we saw in zero magnetic field as a function of temperature. We had this minus log T over 1.5 decades, no doubt up to 10 Kelvin, and then this stronger divergence, which is roughly going like 1 over square root of T or so. So to come back to the question whether spin density based theory, spin fluctuation theory in the two-dimensional version can explain these data, we think that the prediction by the theory for the asymptotic behavior of the Sommerfeld coefficient is this logarithmic divergency as a function of field. And that means we do see a striking variation a deviation from this prediction. We have also checked the scattering cross section. Here we form the Kadowaki-Woods ratio, A over gamma naught square, and this theory would lead to an asymptotic form like 1 over field times the square of log field. And that is checked in the right panel here. In the right figure, we have plotted here 1 over square root of k times field versus field on the log scale. So this straight line is indicating this formula. And you see again at elevated temperature, our data are in agreement with the theoretical prediction and then deviate towards larger values, meaning since we have here 1 over square root of k, that our value depends weaker on the field at low fields than theoretically predicted. So anyway, this does not seem to be in agreement with the theoretical prediction. We make another interesting observation, namely that this material near its quantum critical point is described by two characteristic energy scales. One you may call the effective Fermi temperature of the quasi-particles, which you just get from the inverse of the Sommerfeld coefficient. And that vanishes proportional to the field to one-third power also. And the other one is what I called so far the crossover temperature between this low-lying field-induced Landau-Fermi liquid state and the non-Fermi liquid state. You may call it the spin fluctuation temperature. And that goes linear in the field. And that can be seen by looking at the insets. Here we have some kind of scaling function for the specific heat data plotted versus T over B. And here we have the temperature derivative of the resistivity versus T over B. And you see that all the various temperature traces taken in various fields fall on top of each other. How many? Five? Okay. I have two more points I want to make. One is the evolution of the exponent in the temperature power law dependence of the resistivity as a function of field. I hope you can see that. This is for the undoped material where the field is parallel to the C-axis. That means the critical field is 7 kiloersted. And that is for the 5% germanium doped single crystal for the field parallel to the planes where the critical field was this tiny value of 270 oersted, so it's very close to zero. So the color code means the exponent 1 is red and 2 is dark blue. And you see right at the critical field, in a very narrow range, to the lowest temperature, we find this non-Fermi liquid behavior, which otherwise is spread over wide parts of the phase diagram. While at low temperature on either side of the critical field, you have a Landau-Fermi liquid state, a very heavy one, as I've shown you on either side. And you see this this sharp phase boundary between ordered and paramagnetic here, and this rather broad crossover regime on the high field side. So the question is, why is this interferomagnetically ordered phase behaving as a heavy Landau-Fermi liquid? I think that has to do with the very tiny ordered moment. I showed you before we had zero field susceptibility experiments which showed that above the nail temperature up to 0.3 Kelvin, the susceptibility was following a Curie-Weiss law with a very large moment of 1.4 mu Bohr. Less than 1% of that big moment is involved in the ordering. The rest of the moment, the biggest part of the moment, is still undergoing fluctuations. And that's very fast fluctuations at low temperature, quantum fluctuations that constitute the heavy Landau-Fermi liquid state on either side, by the way, of the critical field, because this tiny moment at higher fields is polarized by the field, but the rest, the biggest part of the moment, is undergoing the fluctuations. Well, on the other side, you see we have pushed here the critical field all the way to zero, so we can observe only this right part, the phase diagram, and you will see again this wide crossover range, and you also see that this crossover temperature is following almost a linear temperature dependency as a function of field. Is not exactly, because the scale is different. There's an anisotropy. The value of the critical field is higher. It's I think a factor of 3 in the critical field. We haven't yet carefully studied this configuration at low temperature. You have to go to the millikelvins, and that hasn't been done for this configuration. So the last point I would like to allude to is the so-called disparity in the behavior of the zero field resistivity and Sommerfeld coefficient in the germanium doped sample. And I've shown you the data a couple of times before. At about 10 Kelvin, upon cooling, we find this linear temperature dependency in the resistivity all the way down to 10 millikelvin, and we find the corresponding minus log T increase in the Sommerfeld coefficient, also starting above 10 Kelvin, but stopping at 0.3 Kelvin. So above 0.3 Kelvin, the world is in order. I would say the quasi-particles behave as they should according to theory. But below, there is some disparity in the behavior. That's an intrinsic feature. Well, let us make the following very simple speculation. The the resistivity is certainly probing the light component of the composite quasi-particle, so that conduction electron contribution to these quasi-particles, the itinerant part. And maybe no surprise that this part behaves as itinerant spin fluctuation theory would predict, down to the lowest temperature, while specific heat coefficient is probing the local spin part, the heavy F part. And what we see here apparently is that this part is much more sensitive to the nearby magnetic order than the light part is. So in other words, when we approach the quantum critical point by cooling, the growing mutual interactions among the quasi-particles mediated by the fluctuations seem to break up the composite fermions into their components. That's the last thing I wanted to say here. Without my conclusions, you can read through all the things I've discussed. Apologize for this typing error. Compound should read component here. Thank you very much.
Questions? If I remember correctly, this faster increase of gamma at the lower fields is somewhat reminiscent to what was seen in uranium, copper, palladium, where they also had. Mm-hmm. So could it be that, and in that system, it's been said that there's a lot of, there may be a wide distribution of condo temperature because of disorder.
Yeah.
So do you think this could apply here?
We discard this because you have seen the residual resistivity is now 1 micron centimeter. If you look up this material, I think it's 2 orders of magnitudes higher. So I think disorder is really the last thing we should take into account. But of course, nobody knows. Yeah.
A question regarding the a large moment, large fluctuating moment at low temperatures. If one looks at the entropy, is this all still there, or is the is this consistent with the thermodynamics that you have such a large fluctuating moment at this fairly low temperatures?
A good question. So as I said, the entropy is very tiny, but of course that is the entropy, the difference between the zero field data and what did we take? I think the overcritical data was the upturn, only the entropy associated with the phase transition. And that was in order with a small moment. No, we didn't check the complete entropy. So that's a good idea.
Is there information on the order moment as a function of pressure?
Not yet, because you think you're asking whether we did susceptibility. We did not under pressure.
Because you showed the tiny moment, but you were very close to the critical point. So
sure. No, it's a good idea, but
it's small because
to be honest, we can't at the moment do susceptibility in the pressure cells. So far, we only can do resistivity. So, but that's also has to be done. Yeah.
But you think that it's small because of an accident? You are too close to the critical point, or do you think that when you apply pressure, it will stay small?
No, I think it will come up, and that's why we didn't start, if I can explain why we didn't start neutrons, we have to start on a high pressure side, because we do expect that the moment will be bigger and the nail temperature higher to fix the Q vectors and then go down back in pressure. That's and you know the single crystals are very tiny. We need a stack of 40 in a pressure cell, and so far we have 25. By the end of the year we'll have them, and next spring I hope we can do the experiment.
Okay, so if there is no other question, let's thank Frank again.